You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. This week, it's Dave Kellner alongside Dave Tindall to look at the Volvo China Open and the Zurich Classic of New Orleans on the PGA Tour. First of all, a warm welcome to the man sitting alongside me. Good afternoon to you, Dave Tindall.
Hello, Dave. And we've got a new format.
We have, which I'm looking forward to chatting to you about and getting your thoughts on whether it's a good idea, a bad idea, or if you're indifferent to the idea.
We've replicated it in the studio by coming in as a pair. So Mike's had to sit this one out.
Yeah, Mike isn't available on the podcast this week, but hopefully he'll be back next week. Just before we get stuck into the two events coming up on the schedule, quick word on last week, and we saw Kevin Chappell finally get over the line on the PGA Tour Sunday. Pretty impressive performance, I thought. He needed that birdie on the 72nd hole and went out there and won the championship. And he was overjoyed. His caddy was happy. Good scenes in Texas on the Sunday.
Yeah, the family ran up to him and all that. That was lovely to see. Yes, I think he deserved it because he didn't go back to the field. Koepka had to come out of the pack to get him, and he didn't even get him, you know, despite that. So I thought it was really good stuff from Kevin Chappell. I mean, you sort of go back a number of years. He was third when Rory won his US Open back in 2011. He's been runner-up in the Players' Championship. He is a great ball striker, but it's just the putting that let him down. And I think that's ultimately what put me off him last week. I think he was ranked before last week something like 205th in strokes gained putting, which is nearly last. So I thought, well, he'll probably be up there. It's kind of, but why get over the line this week? But I guess all of them at that level can have a decent putting week, and he held a crucial one on the last to win.
He did, and as Justin Ray from the Golf Channel noted, that was his sixth top three finish the last two seasons on the PGA Tour. Only Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth have more in that span. So
elite company.
Elite company, precisely. And a well-deserved win for Kevin Chappell. In the other event in Shenzhen in China, Bernd Wiesberger eventually got over the line. His was a different type of performance to that of Kevin Chappell's. He wobbled slightly. Tommy Fleetwood made a run on the Sunday, and Bernd Wiesberger eventually prevailed in a playoff. So it was a different kind of win for Wiesberger. Maybe not as accomplished. Does that sound harsh? Not as accomplished a win as Chappell's?
Possibly. It was similar in some ways, in that a guy flew out of the pack to get to him, but I think he got a bit lucky as well, because in some ways that it wasn't a bigger playoff, because Ross Fisher three-putted the last. George Kurtse, I think, was tied for the lead and took an eight, I think, at the final hole. So he could have, you know, there were those that came to win the race as well, and maybe it was just his time.
The European Tour on a Sunday often provides that kind of drama, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so it was an interesting week, that one, but a bit weather-delayed as well, which gets on your nerves a little bit. But Wiesberger, fair play to him. He's had that many good finishes. Again, similar to Kevin Chappell, you keep knocking at the door, eventually you get through it at some point. I know that's his fourth now, I think, for Wiesberger, but he doesn't win as often as he should for the amount of good positions he gets into.
He's at the top of the betting this week for the Volvo China Open here with William Hill. Bernd Wiesberger 9-1. Ross Fisher is 10-1. Alexander Levy is 20s. David Lipsky, Fabrizio Zanotti, George Kurtseer, Joost Luiten and Jordan Smith and Peter Uihlein and Tongchai Zhaidi, all 25s. Kiradek Apibanarat is 28-1. Torbjörn Olesen is 28-1. Pablo Larrazabal is 33s. And it's 40-1 and bigger the remainder. And the tour remains in China after last week's Shenzhen International. And for the second year in succession, Topwin Golf and Country Club in Beijing is the host course for the event. Scoring was very low last year. Hao Tongli was exceptional, recording a 22 under par total and winning by three from Felipe Aguilar. And as you mentioned in your Roto World piece that's available on that website, You've done a full preview of this event, Dave. There were 38 players that finished 10 under par or better for the week. And it's reasonable to expect it to play out similarly this week.
Yeah, I think this is the real reason why Mike's not here. I think we've got two birdie fests on
I think we could have. We could have.
On the golf this week. And Mike doesn't like that, does he? He doesn't like putting contests. He prefers the pure ball striking test.
That's it.
Yes, it's birdies ahoy, isn't it, this week? And you really do need to make your share. I don't really like the front end of the market this week. It kind of last week it did work out. I think Wiesberger and Fleetwood were actually the top two, and the betting Bubba was third because of his poor form. But I don't think we're quite going to get the same this week.
Okay,
my opinion.
As for the course itself, Ian Woosnam designed the golf course, par 72. It isn't overly long, measuring just 7,261 yards. There's a couple of very long par fives, but that's negated by some par fours that you think the setup will mean that they are drivable on the week, so reachable par fours as well. It's quite a nice dynamic.
Yeah, there was some. If you look at the breakdown of scores last year, there's some funny. Normally, you just think you do your scoring on the par fives and you sort of hold your own on the rest. But I think Richie Ramsey was 14 under on the par fives on the par fours.
On the par fours, yeah,
fours last year, and didn't do anything elsewhere. So. Yeah, you look at the yardages. If you go on the European Tour website and click on the hole yardages, there's lots of 300 and a bit holes. Mm. So you'd like to think some of the big hitters can get to those in one.
Do you think it is a big hitters golf course?
I think so. I think so more than last week. I think, yeah. Well, the guy I've picked can absolutely hammer it, so I'm going to say yes. But I do genuinely think that, yeah.
The guy that I've picked can absolutely hammer it as well.
Is it the same fella?
Mine's a triple figure price.
No,
don't. No, it's not then. Go on, I'll let you lead off.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Dean Burmester, the South African.
40 to 1.
Yeah, 40 to 1. He does hit an absolute mile. We saw him win earlier this season for the first time at the Tshwane. Just a little note I made of that. The week before, he'd messed up. He got into contention and messed up the week before, and then he put it right and came out and won the next week. Well, last week in the Shenzhen, he was actually tied third going into the final round, and I almost forgot he'd been in contention because I looked at the final leaderboard. What happened to him?
Well, I looked at, obviously I wasn't on the podcast last week, but I looked on Saturday night and thought if I was going to get involved here, Dean Burmester would be the man I might have picked, so I'm glad I didn't in the end.
He actually shot a 78 on the Sunday, which sounds horrendous, and it's not great. You can't really excuse it. But if you look at it, he actually finished 6-7. So it was kind of a performance that looked as worse as it possibly could for how he played for most of that tournament. So I think maybe tied 38 looks as though he had an average week. He didn't. He had another really good week, I think. And the way he bounced back from disappointment to win the Tshwane, I think he can do something similar. There's something maybe going on in his head a little bit where if he does get down during a round, it just leads to more kind of poor play and he sort of throws it in a bit. But I think once he's got the bit between his teeth and he's going the right way, he can keep going. I think this is going to be a really good course for him. He has played it last year, shot one good round, one poor one, and the poor one meant he missed the cut. Maybe that's tapping in again to this idea that when it goes wrong, it does go wrong. But I think he's gone up several levels this year. I think he's a really, really good player, Dean Burmester. I think 40 to 1 looks a nice price.
Okay, 40 to 1, Dean Burmester is Dave's selection. Just one selection in the event?
Yeah, there's a lot around there who have got good chances. Zanotti, Kurt C, Lipsky, but they're all just a bit 25-ish to 1 to me. You know, somehow your brain's trained to wanting more on those sort of players.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna pass them by, but I think there is a bit of juice in Burmester.
I'm going with Nicholas Coulthart's at 100 to 1 as my sole selection. It wasn't entirely borne out by last season's leaderboard, but I'm with you. I think long hitting, aggressive play is going to be rewarded this week at Topwin, and I think Coulthart's fits the bill and is worth rolling the dice with this week at 100 to 1. Needs a big week as well. Currently sits 151st on the race to Dubai, and he's hardly set the world alight this season. That would be an understatement. He's not played well. But there were reasons to be encouraged by last week's performance. Finished in 39th last week. That was his best performance since a tie for 28th at the Qatar Masters. Closed with a 67 as well, admittedly when the pressure was off last week, but it should have put him spot on for this. He actually ranked 6th in driving distance and 5th in greens in regulation in Shenzhen, so His long game is in pretty good order. That augurs well. But his short game does need to improve drastically. But to get a Ryder Cup and a two-time European Tour winner in this field at 100-1, I thought was fair. Finished 15th here last year. That came on the back of a string of poor results as well. So it's a course that I think suits him. And I thought he was worth a blast at a triple figure price this week.
Yeah, I was kind of turning my nose up a bit as you started talking through that. But when you said that last bit, that he played well last year on the back of poor form, maybe, yeah, that it does, it is a course really good for him. So,
yeah
I mean, he's 100-1, isn't he? But I know what you're saying. Yeah, I think
if you were backing just players purely on form every week,
yeah, you're not,
you would, he'd be the first one you put the pen to, really.
It's just with him, I've kind of had that feeling, well, he's a Ryder Cup player at his best for like about the last 25 weeks.
It could be the game has completely gone.
Yeah, he had some decent form last year, didn't he? He had a few thirds. I've looked at him because he is sort of being dangled at a price, isn't he? When you go through them and compare him to some players around him who've got nothing like the same pedigree, you do start. But I think I've looked too much and been disappointed. So
yeah, giving up for the time being.
Yeah, on him, yeah.
Well, so hopefully he'll spring towards the top of the leaderboard this week. Yeah, I just like the price, really, 100-1, and I thought it was definitely fair.
Yeah.
Who else came closest? For me, at the top of the market, Alexander Levy looks like a perfect fit for this golf course at 20-1.
Very good in China, isn't he?
Yeah, very good in China. Won this event before, hasn't he?
Yes, yeah. That was at Genzon, which actually they played last week.
Yeah, yeah. And he played decently last week, and he's 20-1 this week. And I think attacking players rewarded around here. I can see him going well. Again, the price is nothing to shout from the rooftops about on Alexander Levy at 20-1, but he came closest away from Colsarts.
Yeah, I'm looking at the other South Africans as well as Burmester, Brandon Stone and Dylan Fratelli. I think those two could move up a serious. I mean, Stone's already kind of well established, isn't he? But I think Fratelli's the next one who could come through and get a win or two in the early part of the European Tour season. And yeah, I think when you're looking around for a bit of value, I think it's with the South Africans this week.
Okay, that's the Volvo China Open. Let's move on to the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, and we'll start with the change to the event. Up until this year, it's always been a standard stroke play event, but for those that aren't aware, the PGA Tour, the players and the sponsors all collaborated following what the Tour and the sponsors deemed disappointing renewals in terms of attracting the big names and viewership in the last few years. And whatever you think about the format, which we'll come on to shortly, the change in the short term has definitely worked, because last year there were only three players inside the top 30 in the world rankings that committed to this event. This year there are 13. And I think the general feeling ahead of the event has been one of positivity. Let's give a team format a go and break up the traditional stroke play events that dominate the schedule. And this is the first official team competition on the PGA Tour since 1981, when the Walt Disney World Team Championship was part of the tour. So you've got pairings here, and as you can see from the betting list on the William Hill website, there are some teams that make you think, how the hell do they know each other? And that team could have a 10-shot start and they still wouldn't be troubling the judges at the end of the week. But there are some intriguing pairings at the head of the betting as well. It is team play. It is foursomes. It is four balls this week. The top-ranked player got to choose his partner as well. So there are some strange combinations in the betting.
What's your favourite strange one?
My favourite strange one, I think, was right down at the bottom. Spencer Levine and Rocco Mediate was my favourite, I think, at 250-1. But there are some very, very weird ones. There are some intriguing ones at the top of the betting, though, as well.
Yes, the top of the betting. Yeah, it is almost amazing to have got those four names, Fowler, Day, Rose and Stenson, all playing in a kind of not big week.
Let me spin you through the betting.
And Spieth, of course.
Jason Day playing with Ricky Fowler, 5-1. Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson forming a partnership, 5-1. Jordan Spieth, Ryan Palmer, 8-1. Daniel Berger's playing with Thomas Peters there, 12-1. The two South Africans, Brandon Grace and Louis Oosthuizen, playing together at 16s. Watson and Holmes, 16-1 in the betting. Justin Thomas and Bud Cawley are 20s, along with Kevin Chappell and Gary Woodland. and it's 25-1 and bigger the rest. Basically, at the end of the day, what it boils down to is lowest score still wins at the end of the week.
Yeah.
They play two rounds of foursomes on Thursday and Saturday, two rounds of four balls on Friday and Sunday. Foursomes, if you're not au fait with how it works, alternate shot, you play the same ball. Four balls, you both play your own ball, and the best score at the end of the hole counts. So that's how it works. I'm for it. I'm willing to give this a go. We have stroke play all year long, event after event after event on the PGA Tour. Why not break it up slightly?
Yeah, I think definitely so. But to begin with, I did think, oh, this is quite fun. And then I thought, that's a different thing to saying this is a good thing to bet on. And I initially sat down and thought, I don't really know what to do here. How do you get a handle on it, really? What do you put? Do you just... Obviously, the odds have they've sort of done it for us, basically, you know. It's kind of an amalgam of maybe their prices, possibly. I don't know if there's some set formula, but you can get a rough idea of how it's done. But then there's kind of the X factor elements, I think, like how well they play together as a pair.
I think that's a very good point. And what about the golf course? Because that's the only constant we've got here. They're playing TPC Louisiana
Pete
again.
Pete
Dye design, 7,425 yards, players to a par of 72. How much stock do you put in course form when analysing this event? Any, none, a little bit, a lot?
You can certainly help use it to persuade your argument for if they've got good course form. But I looked at last year, there were three players in the top 10, four in the top 10, I think, who've never played there before. And three of them were ranked outside the world's top 100. So if they can do it, I think some of these guys can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you look less at course form than you usually
this
would.
Way, yeah, it's not. If it was a particularly hard course, maybe, or say they were playing at Augusta National or something, really. But this one is just a kind of easy par 72, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I agree it's wholeheartedly.
Just, it's there to be shot at.
Picks then, picks. And yes. Reasoning why. You've got a couple of selections, haven't you?
I have, yes. And I've just realised that... I was banging on about South Africans in China. Well, I'm on them again here.
Grayson Oosthuizen, yeah.
I think it's fairly well known, isn't it, that those two absolutely went on fire at the President's Cup in 2015. They won all four games together. So, obviously, there is that X factor there. There is that chemistry there where they can feed off each other. So, I thought that was a big thing. The two, obviously, very classy players. Grace has come into some nice form, did well at the Masters, and then he's played well the last 2 weeks, so he's coming into some nice form. Because I'd probably say...
Were you not slightly disappointed with Brandon Grace last week? That's the only thing I'd say, because he opened up with a 8-under par first round on Thursday, and yeah. He's notoriously I'm not saying you're closing from after the first 18 holes, but he's notoriously good when in contention and when in form. And to finish I think he finished the tournament 7-under par in the end. He was dropped off slightly.
Yeah, for me, the other way looking of that, he was tied 10th, so
yeah.
I'd still class that as a good week. I know what you mean. I think, but if it was maybe a normal event, but the fact now he gets...
He won't class it as a good week, though, will he, Grace?
No, but then you could say, well, he's, you know, be determined to do better this week. And I think maybe going into an event with his mate there now, that kind of it'll be easier to just play well rather than just plod on again. So I think it will inject a bit of new fire into him this week. Oosthuizen clearly loves the format. I had a look on one of the websites, stats websites. You can actually see how people are paired together. In the last two rounds, Oosthuizen played when Grace was his partner. Shot 64 and 68.
Right.
So that adds to them playing well as a pair.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 16-1. I think you've got... You look down further down the list, apart from the obvious ones like Day and Fowler, Stenson and Rose... You can sort of spot a weak link in quite a few of these. Even Spieth, Ryan Palmer, to be honest. I mean, he played well last week, but is he? Well, we're looking at Grace and Oosthuizen, they're proper.
They are.
Two proper players.
Oosthuizen, and the only thing you could level against him is he's not had success on American soil, has he? He's never won on American soil, has he, Oosthuizen?
No, I mean, he's got to play off at the Masters.
Yeah, which is obviously fantastic. Yeah. You just expect a player of his calibre. I think when he looks back at his career, do you think he'll be disappointed with the lack of success he's had on the PGA Tour? I think there's a possibility he might. I'm not saying he's not going to come because he is such a classy player.
Yeah, possibly. But
he's so laid back, isn't he? Yeah. Who he used to, isn't that?
Because Grace is quite sort of,
yeah,
you know,
I think they complement each other perfectly. We saw that in the President's Cup.
He's more like the sort of dog with a bone, sort of, you know, come on, sort of type player. So yeah, they do have nicely contrasting temperaments, and there can be a bit of them against us because a lot of it is American pair. So I think that will sort of help generate the sort of President's Cup feeling in them. So yeah, I think a 16-1. What? Just check our each way terms.
It's 50 odds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
yeah,
and 6.
Yeah, so we're 6.
Yeah, I do like that as well because there's a lot of ragtag pairings towards the bottom of the betting that you think aren't going to get involved in the business end.
But yeah, just that feeling that you do look around and maybe there are some weak links. Like Brooks Koepka, he's got his brother Chase Koepka.
Yeah, you couldn't. I don't think you could even. That's going to be an interesting dynamic because Brooks Koepka's said that it could either go one way or the other. We could get very, very annoyed with each other early on or spark off one another and play well. But Chase Koepka's ranked below the 1,000 mark in the world golf rankings.
I know, it's a bit like sort of Oasis reforming and getting the other brother to come and join in. Can't do that, can you?
50-1, I think, looks short to me. I've actually got a pick towards the top of the betting here. I like Berger and Peters as my favourite pairing.
Yes, I can see why.
And I think one thing we've not mentioned is equipment here. Do you think that plays any part?
The fact that they have to use the same ball?
Yeah, on foursomes. I think it's a
factor.
I think it's a factor. And that's something that these two both play Callaway equipment, but not only play Callaway equipment, they play exactly the same ball, which I think is a positive. They both play the Callaway Chrome Soft, which I think in foursomes play is a significant factor this week.
Is that why are they together?
They're good friends, apparently.
Right. I mean,
and they are both Callaway
ambassadors.
I've no idea, to be honest. But one presumes so. I presume they've met up when they've been using the Callaway equipment on some of those promotional days, you would think, but I've no background information about how they've become friends, Berger and Peters.
Because a lot of the guys, Americans, are kind of went to college together. They're Alabama products and all this sort of business. Yeah. But those two, maybe it is the equipment thing.
And both are obviously well-suited to match play format, particularly four balls as they're very aggressive scorers. And as Peters showed in the Ryder Cup, it can be a format in which he thrives as well. Doubles play, if you want. He played brilliantly on his debut at Augusta to finish in a tie for fourth. I'd expect a huge performance this week. Berger was the other one that I fancied as an outsider for the Masters, and he didn't entirely live up to expectations, but he played respectably to finish in a tie for 27th. That came on the back of a fifth-place finish at the Houston Open, and he's played the course in competition twice, Berger. Finished 20th last year and 6th on debut back in 2015. Very good putter on Bermuda grass greens as well.
Well, that's my fly in the ointment because Peters is rubbish
is
on
that right?
Bermuda grass.
I didn't realise that. You see.
Look, all his good performances this year, you can break them down to Bermuda and non-Bermuda and on-Bermuda. He's not had it.
Oh,
so
that's
it's a relatively small sample size and surely it will change. But for now, that's the one thing that put me off, and a little bit of the price, maybe.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go a point each way at 12s. If there were 16s, I'd be having a bigger bet, I think. But I really fancy them for this event, Berger and Peters. I just think they'll complement each other perfectly. They've both got big games. They'll score really well in the four balls. I'm convinced of that. Hopefully, they can keep it together in the foursomes. And both playing same equipment. And they've just both got huge futures. So
yeah, it's a good angle, the equipment one, because it's kind of not really spoken about much. When you know, if you've got a favorite ball, I mean, they're that good, aren't they, that can make all the difference.
Well, wasn't it the year we're going back to Hal Sutton in the Ryder Cup when Mickelson and Woods played together and there was the whole debate about, and Mickelson said he found it very, very difficult to get to grips with playing the Nike ball on that occasion. And I think it does makes a massive difference in the foursomes. So that's the that's an angle in with those two. Obviously, they're both superstars. They're both going to be superstars anyway. But that's another angle in.
Yeah, very good.
Who are you going with as your second pick then?
Yeah, so I've gone for the another pair of mates, a pair of Georgia Bulldogs. Can you, does that...
The,
you
the, the Patricks, is it?
Information to make you guess who we've gone for there.
Is it the Patricks? Reed and Cantley, no?
Nope.
Are they not Georgia Bulldogs?
It's Swafford and English.
Swafford and English.
Yes,
okay.
They are both Georgia Bulldogs.
I need to find out where Patrick Reed and Patrick Cantlay are from then as well. I thought Reed might be a Georgia Bulldog, is he?
No, he went to some other university in Georgia, kind of lesser one.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna have a quick look now.
Like going to what? It's like someone in this country.
He went to University of Georgia, yeah. Augusta State University.
Say, like a few years ago, someone here said they went to Oxford. It was Oxford Poly.
Yeah, precisely. I like Swafford at the moment. He's playing some good golf, isn't he?
So Swafford won earlier this year, and then he had a little dip, which wasn't a surprise, but then he bounced back with some really nice form. He had a couple of back-to-back top 10s, a 10th and a 6th. Missed the cut of the Masters, but I don't really put too much in that. So Swafford, I think, should be suited by this course. Hits it a long way, makes lots of birdies.
Yeah.
Harris English isn't in the same form, but the thing with him that I like is I had a close look at the results in the Shark Shootout, and he's got an incredible, ridiculously good record.
Has he?
Last 4 years, he's got 2 wins and 2 seconds. Now, obviously, that isn't with Hudson Swafford, it's with Matt Kuchar. But you like to think Harris English, in his head, will think, well, I'm good at this pairs thing. And
back a few years, by the way, calling the Shark Shootout.
Yeah, it's got something.
Franklin Templeton now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, Greg, no, it's changed since then.
Has it changed since then?
This year it's got an even different name.
I didn't realise that.
Some sort of, I don't know, something that's not memorable because I can't remember it. But so the last 4 years in that, with that pairs event, I think that's greensomes, which is, it's got a hybrid of four balls and foursomes, scramble, and then, anyway, it's pairs event.
Yeah.
And Harris English is very, very good at that. Seems to enjoy having someone alongside him to bounce off and feed off. Yeah, whether that's Kuchar, because he's Mr. Steady, Mr. Reliable, English feels he can go for it. Maybe will he have the same chemistry with Hudson Swafford? We're not sure, but they are great mates. Have been to, English went to Swafford's wedding, that kind of thing. Both Georgia Bulldogs. And at their best, I think they're two very good players. And 50-1. I think that's a fair price on those two.
Yeah, I agree. Good price.
So I've kind of got one.
And I do like Swafford a lot. I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Both make lots of birdies. One's in really good form. The other's really good at pairs. So that's my thinking. We're pulling in these strands, aren't we, and trying to sort of make something out of it. But that's an angle that I've got on those two anyway.
I think my the other pairings that came closest for me were Justin Thomas and Bud Cawley at 20-1. They are an Alabama partnership.
Yeah.
And Cawley's obviously in very, very good form at the moment. And Justin Thomas will be aggressive and is a top-class player who's won twice on tour this season.
I look closely at them, but because of the Bud Cawley, I think they should be a bigger price.
Yeah, I kind of think that way as well.
Mm.
Bud Cawley's being priced in with Justin Thomas based on recent form rather than
actual normal Bud Cawley.
Normal Bud Cawley. even though I think Bud Cawley came onto the PGA Tour with such a reputation, maybe he's finally realizing that potential. Perhaps you could look at it that way, I suppose,
but that's kind of, that price suggests he has already realized it. I think that's saying he's better than he is. Because Kevin Chappell and Gary Woodland, they're too strong as a pair, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're the same price, so
I agree.
Yeah,
I tell you who else I liked at a price: Keegan Bradley and Brendan Steele.
Yeah,
at 40-1. Brendan Steele obviously won the Safeway Open earlier in the season. Bradley's form has been patchy, but he's put in some good performances this season. And you talked about the Shark Shootout; they won it as a pair back in 2011. The Franklin Templeton.
When it was actually called the Shark Shootout, maybe.
No, I think it was just, I think that really? Was just the year after when it became the Franklin Templeton. we've got to go back like 7 years for when it was called the Shark Shootout now. So Steele and Bradley were, I think, came closest away from my picks. I do like the South African pairing that you've got.
Yeah, Charlie Hoffman and Nick Watney, I had a look at Hoffman. I think there's a lot of good things.
I thought they were short, though, you know.
We've got them at 33s, that ultimately put me off because I'm not sure. Watney did win this event back in 2007. He's had a couple of good performances in Florida, but I don't know, he's still a bit hit and miss. You never know, though, do you? Someone can have, it's like in the match play, It used to be won by players who couldn't putt very well, and we've seen it at Ryder Cup level, like Garcia and Monty, sort of renowned for not putting well. Put them in a team environment, suddenly they hold everything.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of dynamic you could.
That's why I was kind of looking at Jason Duffman and Patton Kizzire as well at 66-1 as possibilities. But yeah, I'm happy. I think we've got a few good runners there with Berger and Peters, Grace Newsters and your Swafford and English as well at 50s.
There's people talking of 50s because they are over 50 and they're 50-1. Stricker and Jerry Kelly. They've got a great record Shark Shootout, Norman Templeton, Frank Spencer, whatever it's called. So they could surprise. Six places, don't forget. I could see them running into a place, maybe.
Quick word on the two pairings at the top of the betting, Day and Fowler, Rose and Stenson. If you had to pick one or the other, which one would it be?
Day and Fowler.
Yeah, okay. And you didn't really like Spieth and Palmer at 8-1 anyway?
Well, it's probably the Palmer element. They're both sort of Texans, aren't they? I don't know how well. I'm slightly surprised. If Jordan Spieth can pick anyone, why has he picked Ryan Palmer? Do we know why?
Yeah, we do. Ryan Palmer's caddy had a bet with Jordan Spieth that he'd beat him. And he beat him straight up in a round that I think it was at Ryan Palmer's caddy's course.
Yeah.
And they were playing together. They're friends, but they were playing together. And Ryan Palmer's caddy said, he's an accomplished golfer, obviously.
Yeah.
Said, if I beat you this afternoon straight up, you've got to play with Ryan Palmer in the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, which makes a little bit of a mockery of the event, admittedly. And he did beat him straight up, and Spieth subsequently has partnered with Palmer.
Right. Mm.
So that's the story behind that partnership.
That makes me even less inclined to back them, I think.
Well, there you go. 8-1 they are. Let's recap the selections then, Mr. Tindall. I don't suppose there's a player or a team you don't want to win this week, is there?
Not really, because I could let, if Day and Fowler win it at 5-1, I can let that go. That's all right.
Yeah, I think I'd be Bradley and Steele at 40s if I was having another string to my bow here.
I think Thomas and Corley would be, because it's the price that's totally put me off them. If they were maybe 33s, I would have gone, I'll have some of that, but not 20s.
Let's recap the selections then. Volvo China Open, first of all, Dave.
Yes, just a point each way on this one. That will go on Dean Burmester at 40-1.
I'm going with a point each way, Nicholas Kolsarts at 100-1. As my selection in China and in the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, Dave?
Yeah, I'll go a point and a half each way on the South African duo, Grayson Oosthuizen, at 16s. And I'll just go half a point each way on Swafford and Harris English at 50s.
Yeah, I'm going a point each way, Berger and Peters at 12-1 as my selection. Thank you for your company, Mr. Tindall.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened to the podcast. Remember, do download this via audioboom.com, type in William Hill. Check us out on iTunes as well. And you can follow us all on Twitter, at D. Kellner, at Dave Tindall Golf, at M. Grennan. Might tweet out a couple of thoughts for this week's golf as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.